We welcome you to Press Row, a TxAgs produced podcast with local media, and it is episode number 10 in the 2020 edition of the show. Press Row and all TxAgs podcasts can be found at TxAgs.com/podcasts or iTunes or Google Play. However you take podcasts, we got you covered. I'm Gabe Bach, joined by Olin Buchanan of TxAgs, Robert Cessna, the Bryan College Station Eagle, and Jersey Mike Lucas of KAgs. Fifth-ranked Aggies take a five-game winning streak to the loveliest village on the plains to take on Auburn coming up this Saturday. A&M coming off a 20-7 home win over defending champion LSU. Might not have been the most aesthetically pleasing game in the world due to a down night on offense, but still, game was never in question in the second half due mostly to an elite effort by defensive coordinator Mike Elko in the A&M defense. So let's dive into that as we welcome everybody in. Guys, how are we doing today?
Doing good.
I'd like to put a shout out to my eldest daughter. It's her birthday today, and Cassie watches Press Row all the time, whether her dad is on or not. So I'd like to say happy birthday to my daughter.
Gosh, I can remember buying Polly Pocket dolls for her third birthday present. Man.
You're still buying Polly Pocket dolls for her. She's just a little older.
I don't know if those things even exist anymore.
I never heard of them. Mike, you ever heard of them?
Polly Pocket? No, I think it's a little before my time, Cease.
So thanks, guys. Appreciate me doing that.
That's very cool. Cassie, I hope my daughters are as big a fan of me as Cassie is of you and your kids. That means you're a good dad, Cease.
Good children will make you do that. So, yeah.
That's right.
And good children will make us be laughing here today.
Yes, absolutely. All right, so let's get into LSU for a minute. A lot of conversation by the A&M fan base, regional, national media about this game. I mean, you beat the defending champs. You won five in a row in the thick of the playoff conversation as the calendar now turns to December. Yet some people aren't happy because it wasn't pretty enough. Does it need to be? What did you guys think about the game? The good, the bad, and the ugly. Olin, why don't you kick us off?
Well, obviously the defense was really good and the offense was sluggish. But we all know that over the course of a long conference schedule, because you have more conference games than ever, it's very common to have some games where you don't play your best. Look at Northwestern last week, 2 weeks ago. Everybody's raving about Northwestern, and they lose to Michigan State that quite frankly, hasn't been impressive all year.
Rutgers beat Michigan State, and Rutgers doesn't beat anybody.
There you go. So
this year, Rutgers is decent.
Shout out New Jersey. Shiano's back, baby.
Oregon State beating Oregon. You know, it happens. And for some reason, there are those that's in the national media that seem to hold A&M a subpar game against A&M against the Aggies more so than it appears to me. And they hold a subpar game against somebody else. I mean, when Notre Dame barely beat Louisville, I don't think you heard a whole lot of trashing of Notre Dame. I don't know. Maybe you did. Maybe I just don't remember it. I think you could just go on. Notre Dame basically beat North Carolina by the same margin that A&M beat LSU. Now you could argue that North Carolina is a better football team than LSU is. And maybe that is true. Maybe it's not. But I know North Carolina lost to Florida State. So, just win, though. And if you keep winning, eventually you don't give your critics anything to say against you.
Good point.
You know, in the last two decades that I've been covering A&M football closely or whatever, these are the kind of games that sometimes they would always lose. And then fan base would get upset. Well, now, you know, they're making progress. This is Vanderbilt and LSU. They found a way to win those games. So the fan base should be excited because if you watch the growth of the program, these kind of wins, as they get better, will probably diminish. They'll have more, you know, lopsided or impressive wins if they're making progress. But I look at this as they're actually making progress. They found a way to win. And, you know, the Vanderbilt game, and, you know, sometimes we reflect the fan base. I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, can this team be 5-5 or 4-6 after that horrific Vanderbilt game? But they improved from that. So I expect the same thing to happen this time.
Absolutely, Mike.
Well, it's just funny what people consider a convincing win versus not a convincing win. I mean, you look back even 2 years ago, the 7 overtime win against LSU, it was a 2-point win, and it came down to they made a 2-point conversion in overtime versus LSU not converting a 2-point win in overtime. And that was, you know, by all intents and purposes, a convincing win because they beat a top 10 team at home. This year, A&M dominated LSU for 59 and a half minutes. It wasn't pretty and aesthetically pleasing. It wasn't great. The offense obviously has room to improve, but I'm not sure what is more convincing than being up 3 scores for 52 minutes of the game. So when you look back to Olin's point, you know, you look around, Notre Dame barely beat Louisville. They won by 5, 12-7. That was an ugly game. I don't know how that game went. I didn't see it, but if they were up 12-0 the whole time and Louisville scored a garbage time touchdown, that still relatively convincing. And I don't know how that game went, but this whole notion of A&M didn't win convincingly enough, you're just kind of cherry picking to prove a point one way or another because they were up 20 points the majority of the game. And LSU never really had a chance to get back into it. Now, there's obviously room for improvement. The offense has to play better. But isn't it cool to be covering a program where we're now criticizing wins that weren't good enough? And even in my short time here, like Cease and you guys have been doing this a lot longer than me, but I was at Tennessee when they weren't very good and any win was celebrated like they just won the national championship. And even the first 2 years, you know, we celebrated Florida like it was, you know, a major accomplishment. We celebrated LSU like it was a major accomplishment, which they were. But now we're nitpicking wins. And I just think that shows how much progress Jimbo's made in his 2.5, almost 3 seasons now that A&M's at a stage where it's not just good enough to win. You have to win convincing, whatever convincingly means.
Mike, you came in at the end of someone, is that right, about 17?
I came in middle of Jimbo's first year.
Oh, okay, so you never were around.
Never was around for someone. South Carolina, Jimbo's first year was my first week here.
Well, and this isn't just a Sumlin referendum, or, you know, conversation, but I remember when A&M had like a 1-5 streak going against the Mississippis. I mean, dubious statistics against teams you absolutely should be better than. Let's just go big picture for a second. Jimbo's winning percentage against teams not ranked 1 and 2, 852 at A&M. He's 23-4 in those games, not ranked 1 and 2. He's 21-2 against teams ranked outside of the top 8. He's 15-3 at Kyle Field. In November in his career, he's 34-8. And oh, yeah, he's 2-1 against LSU. His predecessor never beat the Bayou Bengals. So, I mean, come on now. Yeah, it's easy to nitpick. It does need to get better. But A&M's sitting there having still a great opportunity to be knocking on the doorstep of the top 4 when all said and done.
I just wish that they would have been able to pitch that complete shutout. And someone say, it wasn't a convincing win. When you say you win by 3 touchdowns and shut out the other team. But I guess it's that 38 seconds is the difference between being convincing and not convincing.
Well, hey, you know what? Cease and Olin have been to Lake Charles way more often than they'd like to admit. and Ed O knows for a fact how many Cajuns down there had LSU plus 14.5. That's why he didn't kick the field goal. He needed to make sure to at least take care of his constituents in some way, and he did just that. They lost by 13 points, convincingly, I thought.
That's a smart coach.
A&M's had a couple backdoor cover. Or they've allowed a couple teams to backdoor cover the LSU game. Yeah. Arkansas back, and I don't know what the line at Mississippi State was, but instead of scoring that touchdown, they took a knee on the one that definitely would have made A&M cover. It's not an indictment on A&M, but they've dominated those 3 games, and the other team just happened to get a late touchdown to cut into that, you know, the line.
I'm not giving.
Jimbo's just worried about winning.
Yeah, you know what? If I was a college coach, I would know the line. Yeah. And if I had any ability to do so, I would make sure my team covered.
Absolutely.
Because that keeps my fan base who's betting on me keeps them happy.
If you're going to lose, at least make them money, right, Olin?
That's right.
If you're going to win, win enough. Make them happy in their heart and in their pocketbook, for sure. All right, so let's get into your topic, Mike, to kick us off here.
Oh, we kind of stems off of this, but it goes back to just the growth of this A&M program. I look at just my time here. There have been games where either the offense or the defense hasn't showed up. And in the past, when that has happened, A&M has not won very many games. Vanderbilt was the exception, but I think back 2 years ago at Mississippi State, offense was a no-show. They lose to Mississippi State. Auburn last year, offense was a no-show to the last quarter. They can't beat Auburn. Jimbo said it when I asked him yesterday. This is not a game we win in the past. He said, I don't think we win this game previously. And the numbers back it up. And just to see where this team was even last year to this year, the ability to play that complementary football where Kellen was not great and the offense as a whole was not great, but the defense, as Olin said, was elite. And they picked it up. And Buddy Johnson yesterday said, I don't care how bad the offense is. It's our job to get them the ball back. We're forever in debt to them, was his exact quote. We're going to go out, continue to try and make stops and continue to hold down the other offense. So whenever our guys get their rhythm going, we have a chance to win the game. And I keep going back just the progress of the program, but the trajectory is already trending up. You know, they're number five in the country. The College Football Playoff poll comes out tonight. We'll see if they stay, move up, move down, what happens. But I think the arrow is still pointing up at a pretty high angle. I mean, they still can be a better football team, and they're already in the conversation for the College Football Playoff as Jimbo continues to recruit at an elite level and coach at an elite level. And Mike Elko, if there was a National Assistant Coach of the Year award, I think he would have dominated the voting this past week. But yeah, just that defensive performance, the complementary football, and their ability to win when one side of the equation wasn't great. I just think that can't be can't be stated boldly enough that they beat a talented LSU team with virtually no offensive execution.
Well, there is a Assistant Coach of the Year award. It's the Frank Broyles Award. Joe Brady won it last year. Mike Elko's probably got a pretty good chance of winning it. I haven't even thought of that. Like in terms of, I don't know if you guys, if somebody pops immediately in your head, that would be better. But man, he's been unbelievable. And that leads, I think, well, let's hit on that for a minute. What do you guys think about that? Because there's two types of complementary football, I guess. There is the way they won the Florida game where the offense had to pick up for the defense because the defense didn't play well. But then the more part that you got to get hit on that Mike hit is South Carolina. That's complementary football. That's taking a turnover, turning it into seven. That is playing an elite defense and offense on the same night. To Mike's point, Olin, sees we hadn't seen enough of that playing great on the exact same night, and they're still fifth in the country.
Well, you're right, because I thought the South Carolina game, you know, that was going to be a future games. And, of course, I think the 2 weeks off hurt them. I think the offense will get back. But I think the most encouraging thing is the defense now has put two great, games together. And defense is something that's kind of constant. And if they go down to Auburn and have their third straight defensive game, then I think we'll see some more complimentary football.
And quite frankly, I know this is going to make me sound stupid here, but I think the defense actually played pretty well against Florida, understanding who you're going up against. When they had to get the stop, they did. So
big turnover, buddy.
You understand when you go against Florida that they're going to score because that's one of the better offenses in the country. And, you know, just the way offenses are now, rarely do you go out, especially a good one, a good offense, and keep them completely under wraps. So, look, I get it. They gave up 38 points, but they made the plays when they had to. So in that game, I think obviously the offense played a lot better than the defense, but I don't think the defense was terrible. I think it was just a matter of who they were playing. I think we're waiting for that game like South Carolina again. I don't expect them to necessarily beat anybody 48-3 again, but when you feel like that you're watching the offense really playing efficiently and then the defense playing well too at the same time. And if they do that, then you'll probably win convincingly. And maybe that's what it'll take to get the detractors to shut up a little bit.
Olin, what do you have for us? Oh, go ahead, Cease. Well, go ahead,
Cease.
I was just going to say real quick, I agree with Olin on the defense against Florida. I thought they did play good defense. I thought it was Arkansas game that I didn't like the way they played defense. And then they came back and, had two games. And so, I think right now, if they go down to Auburn and have another good game, I think, you know, maybe Mike Elko might take another step towards wrapping up that Frank Broyles Award.
Yeah, you know, you said that the Arkansas, it was interesting you should bring that up, because this will take us into what my topic is going to be. Yeah, they gave up 31 points, but 14 of those were in the fourth quarter when A&M already had a huge lead, so they were meaningless. A&M in the last four games has allowed 17 points in the first three quarters of those last four games. I mean, it's an obvious thing if you think about it, but have you thought about it that the LSU scored a touchdown with 38 seconds to go and South Carolina kicked a field goal with 5 minutes left in the game, and Mississippi State did not score an offensive touchdown until the fourth quarter when they were down, 28-7?
Yeah, their score was a pick six.
It was a pick six. Yeah. So it
– that's three shutouts.
It really brings up the question, at least in my mind, and I don't know if the answer – what the answer is, but is the, quote, you know, wrecking crew moniker, does this defense deserve it? I don't want to say is it back, because there's some buffoons that live about 100 miles from here that say every time you do something well, they say, it's we're back. But in this case, does this defense deserve the moniker? Has it earned the name, the status? Is it reaching that kind of standard, understanding that good defense looks different than it did 30 years ago? I don't know if it has or not. But it seems, if it's not, it seems to be definitely moving in that direction.
Cease, it's the best defense since they said it loud and proud, and they said it often, right? And every time a play was made, the wrecking crew would flash up, and they made T-shirts. We're 20 years removed from that, Cease, right? You probably have to go back to probably 01. You saw a flash of it in 2010. Maybe it's a flash right now. I think it's better than 2010. That group had Vaughn, but I say yes. I mean, they're top 20. Right, you're not giving up 14 points a game. Football's changed, but flair, style, production, shoot, I think Aggie fans should be very proud to call this the wrecking crew defense. What do you think, Cease?
I think they're taking huge steps towards that, because I'm with you, Gabe. The year, you know, the 9-6 over Nebraska, Yvonne Miller bringing it every time, that was a very good defense. Now, as you mentioned, different times. You're also in a different conference where you have much more, you know, great athletes on both sides of the ball, and offenses can score. So I think if they could put a couple more games together, my nitpicking about Arkansas was they gave up those two touchdowns when they're basically their first teamers were still in there. The old wrecking crew would said, hey, we're not going to give up anything. And they didn't have a lot of second teamers in. If they had a lot of second teamers in, then I'd give them a pass. But the last two games, really impressed with what they did. I don't like to throw that moniker out there, you know, until as well, because I've done that before. Then it's turn around and, you know, somebody, if they can hold, you know, Auburn under 20, and if they can do that again when they go on the road to Tennessee, you know, Ole Miss is a different animal, but they're taking steps. And what I like about their steps is you look at that D-line, and I think it starts with that. They got a lot of young people that are coming back. I mean, Elko, this is what I think a lot of us thought Elko's defense would be in the third year. It should only get better than in year four.
Remember,
Mike, what do you think? Go ahead, Ola.
I was just going to say, remember the stats they've produced. You know, in past years, your stats can be padded by playing a really bad or two or three bad non-conference games. And now you don't have that. So that's another thing, but I'm with you. Look, we know that if you're playing in the old days, the wrecking crew made Heisman Trophy quarterbacks look bad. And this wrecking crew has made, or this defense has made, some transfers and freshmen look bad, but they're playing at a very high level. They look like they deserve the moniker, like over the last four games, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I would agree with that. I think the one knock on them is, and they've been fantastic, but the two best offenses they've played this season, Alabama ran rampant on this secondary. Then Kyle Trask in Florida did put 38 on the board and move the ball with relative ease, even though I do think back to your point a little while ago, and they played pretty decent in that game. The teams they have completely stopped and stymied offensively. Mississippi State, they destroyed KJ Costello. That whole Mississippi State experiment with Mike Leach has not gone particularly well. South Carolina, that was before Muschamp got fired. That offense is obviously not, you know, dynamic in any way. And then LSU has struggled to move the ball all season. So they have absolutely dominated the teams they should have dominated, and you have to get credit for that. The better offenses they've played this year have given them a little bit of trouble, or, you know, Alabama, Florida did give them trouble, Arkansas for certain extents of the game. But if they continue to play like this, this is by far the best defense I've seen at A&M, which is only a year and a half. Doesn't really count. I was 3 years old during the Wrecking Crew days, so I'm not quite sure what that was back in New Jersey. You know, we weren't having the A&M games broadcasted to my to my crib, but it's a good defense.
It hurt me.
Yeah, to Cease's point, defenses don't look the same as they used to. College football doesn't look the same as they used to. Alabama gave up 60-something points to Ole Miss this year. If they can shut down that Ole Miss offense, then yeah, I think we start looking at this defense as an elite unit. But until they completely stymie a really good offense, I think we have to just hold back a little bit before comparing them to what I've heard is one of the best defenses in college football history.
What they do is they stop the run. If they play the kind of style that they played back when the Wrecking Crew was the Wrecking Crew, it would fit because they're so good against the run. And I get it when you say, look, South Carolina, Muschamp was out there, not good. But – I think you have to really give him a lot of credit for that game because that Kevin Harris is a big-time running back, and he had 50 yards in that game. But
I don't want to take credit away. They have been really good. I'm just saying I want to see it against some of them.
No, I think so. Ole Miss is a great litmus test, right? Because the old Wrecking Crew would play Ty Detmer. They'd separate both the shoulders. He won a Heisman. They'd shut him down. And Tim Brown got shut down. And Bo Jackson got shut down. Andre Ware shut down. I mean, every year they play a Heisman winner. They completely shut him down. RC Bob Davey had it dialed up. They also didn't play almost anybody good other than one team every single year during the regular season. I mean, Houston's good that year, and then next year maybe Baylor's pretty good. But not like this. To Olin's point, this is an all-conference season, 10 games. And, you know, this year they played two Heisman candidates, and those two Heisman candidates were amazing against them. But I think it's developing into it as we're seeing. Miles Jones has gotten better within the course of the year. Hansford better within the course of the year. Leon O'Neal, Bobby Brown, Tyree Johnson. A lot of these guys are developing right before our eyes. So to Mike's point, the litmus test is they're going to play one more really good offense. Hey, shut down Auburn. Auburn's injured. They're not very good. Offensive, shut them down. Tennessee, not very good. What they do is run the ball. That fits right in your system. Shut them down. Ole Miss, a huge litmus test for truly how far this defense has come. I hope the Aggies by the end of this year are unabashed and calling it the record. Make some T-shirts, sell some stuff, and get this economy going. Record, Chet Brooks, give him a royalty check.
Subscribe to Texas.
Exactly. Subscribe to Texas. Hey, we're back up, OB, because Aggie football are winning, so that's good for us. But no doubt about it. I hope by the end of the year we're unabashed in referring to this as the Wrecking New, like Olin said, or Wrecking Crew 2.0.
Could be. Could be. Looks like training that way. And quite frankly, I would be somewhat optimistic about playing Ole Miss, and even though with that passing game, because – and they're good on the running game, but – yeah. Because of the way they're rushing the passer now.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, they've allowed 10 total points in their last two games. They haven't done that in a two-game stretch since 2000. And that was like, what was that, Baylor and Iowa State, I think, back-to-back. 36 rushing yards allowed, 50 the game before that. Haven't had back-to-back games with allowing 50 or fewer rushing yards since 1999. And that was like Tulsa and SMU. Come on now. This is in the SEC. What they're doing is pretty awesome. You should be fired up about it if you're an A&M fan. Cease, what about the special teams? There's a lot of good right now. There's some, you know, still not returning the ball very well and then getting some penalties. But take us through what you think about the special teams right now.
Yeah, Gabe, when I looked at the game when it was over and when it went gone into that game, I actually thought LSU might have had a slight edge in kicking game because they had a good place kicker. Their punter was outstanding. And lo and behold, A&M special teams more than held up, because I thought that was going to be a blowout. And once again, is we look at these games that we don't expect to be close. Who knows what happens at Tennessee or Auburn? If you go in and struggle again, then you need to have your special teams. And what A&M's done great on special teams is kickoff. Kickoffs, Davis has been great. And those were two big field goals for Seth Small on that turf. Just think if he misses those, then you're looking at a, you know, you're looking at a, you know, suddenly it's a 14-7 game, even though they scored late, and then it doesn't look as great. Constantino gets better every week. Punts, half his punts were inside the 20. And you're right, they had a couple screw-ups on holds. They had two holds on one punt return. And we all keep saying, Olin and I love to say, you know, he's going to break one, and Nias is going to break one, and I think he will, because I love the way he's returning punts. There's a guy within 2 yards. He's so confident he's catching them. I think he will break one. But once again, is that game emphasized to me that I was pretty nitpicky in this special teams early in the year. I thought they did a lot of things that, you know, I didn't know how good they were going to be. But I think this special teams can even get better, because they are really pretty good on the return games, you know, and the other teams starting at the 20 all the time. But once again, is you never know when that close game's going to come. And guys, if they will get into the college football playoffs, then you're going to have to need your special teams, whether it's 28-27 or 14-13 playing a Notre Dame, you're going to need that special teams. So I think what I saw Saturday was somewhat encouraging, even with the holding penalties, that they can help you win that ugly game, which you don't want it to come, but they do come.
Yeah. I mean, good. I mean, the kicker went airborne and made a kick. I've never seen that before in my life.
That was wild. The fact that Seth Small was able to keep it within the upright wall, kicking it almost at like a 90-degree parallel angle to the ground, might have been the most single impressive thing that A&M did all of Saturday night.
He was so good, he might even try out for the Vanderbilt soccer team.
Maybe he might. Who knows? So, I mean, what do you think? Good.
I think he probably Small probably deserves some consideration for the SEC Special Teams Player of the Week.
I think they gave it to the Vandy kicker.
Yeah, I think he did. He actually did more than the person that actually won it. And that's
I overlooked him when the game was over. I said I should have gave Small more credit, particularly that one kick. But, you know, sometimes in the course of a game, even riders screw up, you know, what can I say? But when I look back.
If you're A&M and you're nominating an Aggie for Special Teams Player of the Week, would you nominate Small or Constantino with all the pin downs?
That's a heck of a good question.
That
is a good question.
I think I go Small. He was 2 for 2. Constantino shanked a punt or two. Now, he did down half of them inside the 20, and the one at the 1-yard line was a thing of beauty. You can't draw it up anymore.
Three inside the 10.
Yeah, I'm talking about the one in particular that they down at the 1-yard
line. That one check was awesome. And I love it when the deep snapper either makes a tackle or actually goes down there and downs the ball. That was awesome.
He's the most
– Connor Choate.
He's the most energetic dude on the team. If you watch him on the sidelines, he never sits down. He's fist pumping the whole way on kickoffs. Him and Coach G's kid, Alan Guerrieri, one of the backup kickers, are constantly dancing on this. That from our angle where we get to shoot this year, we see the backs of them. And those two in particular are never sitting down. It's fun to watch because they definitely bring their own juice to the sideline, especially on road games where there's not as many fans anymore.
Look, Anais has been way better than his numbers because he's had a couple returns. Just call back on penalties. That can't happen. The other thing, too, is they're not even trying on kick returns. I'd still want to see Achane. If you're going to put him in for 3 plays, guys, let him return kicks. This is what he does as well as anybody. He's literally a track athlete who's a football-playing dude. I want to see 6 return kicks because right now you're getting a net zero out of kick return.
I'd like to see that too, but I want to say one more thing about Anais as a punt returner, though. It's one of those things that gets overlooked, but what's so, to me, so impressive about Anais is Anais will catch the ball. How much yardage does he save A&M because he'll run up and catch the ball? How many
in
times?
Traffic.
Yeah, well, or anytime. How many times do you see a guy won't catch it and the ball bounces 20 yards? And that's not a problem. Anais has no fear, and he saves the Aggies an awful lot of field position by just going up and catching the ball. I'm not even talking about when he actually gets to run with it.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
I take small over Constantine because 40-yarder and 41-yarder on that surface, I guess I would give the nod to him. But good overall effort by the special teams when they needed it. And like you said, Gabe, we all want to see a kickoff return, but I think special teams will continue to get better.
All right, so last thing I've got for you is good bow, bad bow. Remember good bow, bad bow from Ole Miss. We remember it. I mean, Ole Miss Rebel fans were talking about it every week, what kind of bow was going to show up. But you're kind of talking about that with Kellen some, but version 2.0 is wearing Auburn blue, blue and white and orange. Let's look at Bo Nix's numbers at home versus on the road. I've got some of them. He's 65% passing at home. He's 59% away. This year only. He's even worse last year. His numbers discrepancy at home and road last year were bad too. Touchdowns, 8 touchdowns, 1 pick at home. Touchdowns on the road, 2 at home, 6 interceptions on the road. Quite a bit higher rushing yards per clip. His QB rating is significantly higher, like 57 rating points higher at home versus the road. Bo, what do you think about Bo Nix in general? And what kind of expectations do you have for Nix and the weapons he's got around him? Some of them are banged up, but A&M's a very good defense. But Nix is much, much better in a very friendly confines of Jordan-Hare Stadium where he grew up as a kid going to football games.
I think he's a solid quarterback. I think he has the ability to have a big game, like solid quarterbacks do. He might even be good. But that's it. I think if his last name was something else or if his dad had never, you know, if he'd just gone to school, that he wouldn't be hyped up as much as he is. But Auburn quarterbacks, for whatever reason, typically get hyped up a lot. I do think he's a guy you have to respect. He can run, even though he's not a great runner. He can throw, even though he's not a great passer. But if he puts it together, he's had a couple of 300-yard games. I think he threw for 300 yards and multiple touchdowns against Georgia last year, if I'm not mistaken. So you absolutely have to respect him. If he was incompetent, he wouldn't be playing in the SEC to begin with. But I just don't think he is – I don't think he's a special quarterback. I think we were led to believe that he was going to be. And maybe he will become one. But at this point – he's probably would he be the 5th or 6th ranked quarterback in the SEC if you were just
lower.
Even lower?
Yeah, I'd put Connor Bazelak ahead of him. And Mond and Trask and
Corral
and Jones and JT and Corral, JT wow. Daniels.
Now, he is having to play behind a makeshift offensive line, yep. But he's got some good weapons to throw to. I don't think there's anybody in the conference that wouldn't welcome Seth Williams
absolutely
Schwartz and maybe even Eli Stowe for that matter.
Would you guys put Felipe Franks ahead of Bo Nix?
I think those two are almost interchangeable. There are only a few quarterbacks in the country, not just the SEC, but the country, that you know almost for certain what you're going to get from them on a weekly basis. And that's Fields, Lawrence, Trask, Mac Jones. Like there's 5 to 7, 8 guys. And then there's that next tier. I think Nix falls in the bottom half of that next tier, which is he could go out and he could kill you, but he could also kill himself and the Auburn chances of winning, which we saw against Georgia this year when I think he had 4 interceptions in the first half. And I could be wrong, but he played horrible against Georgia. They could barely complete a pass and Georgia, you know, took them to the backyard and did them dirty. So I think
he was bad against South Carolina.
Yeah. I think it's a crapshoot. And the only thing A&M can control is get pressure on him, make him make quick decisions, because when he has, like every quarterback, when they have time in the pocket, they're obviously a lot better. And if this defensive line continues to do what they've done the last 2 games they've played, I don't trust Bo Nix as an Auburn fan to make the right decision consistently against a swarming A&M defense, especially if Mike Elko continues to be so creative in how he's bringing the pressure and changing up looks post-snap. He just hasn't shown that ability yet. He may develop it at some point, but I go back to that Georgia game because I watched that live, and he was really, really bad against Georgia. Like really, really, really bad. And A&M's defense, I feel like, is pretty comparable to Georgia in the sense that they can get creative pre-snap, post-snap, bring pressures from different areas. And if they have to drop seven in coverage, you have Leal, Tyree Johnson, Bobby Brown, Peavy, and McKinley Jackson, who have proven they can get a push in the pocket without extra blitzers. Then you add those blitz concepts in, and I think Nix will be running for his life back there, especially against the bad Auburn offensive line.
Yeah. Shoot, I like the Cowboy more than Bo Nix. Will Rogers. Will Rogers was great against Georgia. And Luke Doty was great against Georgia. He's two freshmen. But, yeah, I think A&M's defense is every bit as good as Georgia's right now. Georgia's given up a lot of yards through the air.
I just think this is just a huge game for not only him, but Gus Malzahn and Morris coming off that horrible effort against Alabama, which we all thought in the beatdown. You know, I want to see how they're going to attack A&M's defense. Are they going to go more the slot receiver? They're going to try to attack the middle. Do they think they can get extra protection and go deep? As Olin said, those are great weapons they have. And if they're going to be in this game, they're going to get the ball to those guys, either short or long. What's going to be the game plan? Because that's what Auburn's getting ripped for right now. They call Chad Morris's offense a high school offense. He's not the golden boy he was at Clemson. And so now Miles Zahn's supposed to be an excellent play caller. So you got this guy calling plays and you're not getting results. So I just think this is a huge game for that whole threesome, the Trinity, so to speak, Malzahn, Bo, and Morris. What do they come up with? Because, as we talked already, A&M's defense is hitting its peak right now, these last two games. So I think it's a great matchup. I'll be interested to see how they attack A&M's defense.
What worries me is not so much Bo Nix and not even so much as the receivers, even though we saw 2 years ago what they could do in a short amount of time. But what worries me is actually that Gus Malzahn has a way of anticipating when to call the gadget play. And he's done that against A&M so often, and they always seem to work. And he has a way of using your aggressiveness against you. And I'm assuming that A&M's aware of that. How would they not be? And I wonder how – you know, what you do with that. But, you know, last year was what, the double reverse, and then they brought in the backup quarterback to on a pass play for a touchdown. And 2 years ago, it was the halfback pass.
To the tight end, Canella.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Malzahn always seems to pull a rabbit out of his hat late in the season, too. As soon as his back is completely up against the wall and he sees himself in a corner, he seems to always have the answer. And for A&M fans, hopefully it's not this week.
Remember 15 at Kyle Field? He almost ran kind of a sugar huddle fumble rooski. You remember that? Like it right up there, and it was just kind of sitting there on the hip of the guy, and then he just took it. Yep. He was just holding it, waiting for everybody, and then he just hid behind that line and went the other way at 15 at Kyle Field. I mean, we've seen it over and over, and that's what makes you kind of a little bit leery in this. I liked it a lot better, -4. It's grown to 7. Do the Aggies cover if it's at 7 at kickoff? What do y'all think?
First of all, I also want to say is I think he gets up for going against Jimbo from their national championship day. I always think Zahn gets up a little bit extra because he lost that game. He probably thinks he should have won that game. And I know coaches get up for everybody. I think this is a special game every time it goes up against Jimbo. I might be wrong. I think Gus is at the top of his game for Jimbo.
Gabe, I'm going to take A&M in the point. I'm going to give the points. Because not only do I think A&M's a better team, and I think when you play poor, when you're a good team and you play poorly, you come back typically feeling like you got to prove yourself. But on top of that, I still believe that, or I'm skeptical how focused Auburn's going to be a week after playing Alabama.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I'll take A&M in the points just because I think they're a significantly better team at this point of the season than Auburn is. And if it's only a touchdown, A&M should win this game by 10. If it gets more than 7, I think you could lean Auburn's way. But if it's just 7, one score, you're asking me, does A&M win by more than one score? I think the answer is yes.
I'm right on it, thinking that maybe at worst I can tie, right? So it's like it's still at 7. I like it. If it grows 7.5, I like it a lot less. I'll take 7. I think maybe 2 scores, but I have a tough time thinking 2 digits. This game might be – that's just – we've seen it too many times. I think it's going to be pretty tight, but I think the Aggies get it done.
I'm right on the same line of thinking, Gabe.
Yeah.
I'd give the points, and it's a stupid reason why, because normally when A&M has a game like that, then I overcompensate and say, oh, they're going to go on the road. It's going to be tough. But, A, I think A&M will come back on offense, ready to go, play better than ever. And I just don't know what Auburn's playing for. They're hurt. They're coming off that tough loss to Alabama. We've seen A&M have hangover after playing Alabama, and they're not even the Iron Bowl rival as of Auburn is. I'm saying if A&M could jump on them early, man, what is Auburn playing for? But that being said, that's why I lose so much money when I go to Lake Charles, so who knows?
If you look at Kellen's history against Auburn, he's looking for his first four good game against Auburn.
Yeah, yeah, he is. A team that he chose A&M over, that's right. All right, it's the Aggies and War Eagle, an early game, 11 o'clock in Auburn, Alabama, Jordan-Hare Stadium, ESPN. We'll break it all down next week and look ahead to who the hell knows who A&M plays next. Well, now it's a Friday. We think it's going to be Ole Miss and then the trip to Tennessee, but everywhere you look, it still officially has Tennessee on the 12th, but who knows? But we'll be here. That's one thing we promise you on Press Row on TexAggs.com.